Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Herald and Review for Thursday, October 15th, 2020. We'll start with an article on the front page headlined, Macon County Courts, Myers Gets 30 Years for Murder, Man Sentenced in Neglected Child Death, by Tony Reed, Decatur. Anthony Myers was sentenced to 30 years in prison Wednesday for allowing the half-starred two-year-old daughter of his girlfriend to freeze to death in her unheated Decatur bedroom. Myers, 26, had been convicted by a Macon County Circuit Court jury July 16th of first-degree murder. His sentence will be served at 100%. Prosecutors had asked for a 75-year sentence out of a maximum sentence range of 100 years. The jury's verdict had been unanimous after the four-day trial into the death of Tanaja Barnes, whose body had been found February 11, 2019. The child was described by police as wrapped in a urine-soaked blanket, and the freezing bedroom was littered with excrement from the girl and rodents. There was no running water in the home or working toilets, and the filth-ridden house was described as unfit for human habitation. Tanaja's mother, Twanka L. Davis, 22, had been sentenced to 20 years in prison in September 2019 after pleading guilty to helping to murder her daughter through chronic neglect. Myers had claimed in police affidavits that he treated Tanaja like his own daughter, but his defense lawyer, Scott Reuter, had said during the trial that Myers had stayed distant from the girl's immediate care. Reuter said Myers was concerned about getting too close to the child after earlier allegations made against him of child abuse, and he had left her day-to-day care to her mother. Twanka Davis had testified during the trial that Tanaja had been left alone in her room all day and all night before she died. She had said her daughter kept acting up by not taking naps and was being punished for not doing what she was told. As Tanaja starved and froze to death, the jury had been told by First Assistant Macon County State's Attorney Nicole Kroenke that the girl's then one-and-a-half-year-old half-brother slept with his parents in a room with a space heater. The home's furnace had been shut off at night to save money. Tanaja was fed skimpy meals of rice, beans, and noodles and suffered in a room exposed to icy drafts from a nearby broken window. The jury had seen detailed pictures of Tanaja's emaciated, filthy body during the trial. Her death became a statewide scandal for the Illinois DCFS, the latest in a series of deaths involving children whom had previously been in state care. Decatur's Webster Cantrell Hall was also caught up in the scandal. Caseworkers from there, contracted by DCFS, had signed off on living conditions in Myers' home after inspecting it, paving the way for Tanaja, who had been living with a foster parent, to be returned to a situation of neglect that ultimately resulted in her death. Decatur schools, teachers, reprimands among many issues they face. Board hears about difficulties brought on by remote learning, by Valerie Wells, Decatur. 30 Decatur public school teachers have been issued reprimands for failing to follow grading guidelines put in place for remote learning, a union official said, with some educators saying the district's expectations are unfeasible. So my questions tonight are these. When will the micromanaging stop? When will teachers be allowed to make mistakes without facing potential discipline around topics which have always been a conversation before now? Said Chrissy Pettit, president of the Decatur Education Association Teachers Union, during a school board meeting this week. When will the gotchas stop? The culture we are currently teaching in is toxic at best. All Decatur classes have been taught virtually this academic year because of COVID-19. 16 district educators spoke or submitted comments for the Tuesday school board meeting, all pointing to issues with the pacing of lessons, grading procedures, and oversight by administration. Johns Hill Magnet School teacher Heather Sammons said the pacing guides and grading guidelines are unrealistic during remote learning, and teachers are receiving emails late on Friday afternoons scolding them for something they've done and ruining their weekends. Teachers need flexibility to give our students what they need, she said. We are educated professionals and we need leadership to help us. The school district on Wednesday did not respond to an interview request from the Herald and Review about the comments. The school board has a policy of members and administrators not responding to public comments during meetings. At times, the district superintendent will ask for contact information from someone speaking for a follow-up conversation, but that didn't occur Tuesday. Illinois schools shut down in mid-March because of COVID-19. As infection numbers declined this summer, school systems decided whether to have in-person or remote learning or a mix. The school board has said that schools are expected to conduct learning, give grades, and require attendance as usual, whether students are meeting in person or virtually. The district has about 8,700 students. Assistant Superintendent Jeff Dace on Tuesday said he'll meet with teachers to work through the issues. He said remote learning was not designed to deliver instruction long term, but rather fill in during an emergency, although they now need to make it work. Ultimately, if we do not get this right, we are just passing the buck, Dace said, adding later, is it harder during virtual learning? Yes, but at the end of the day, we cannot shift down and take a back seat. These are our kids' lives we're talking about, and they still have to get this instruction, and we need all hands on deck. MacArthur High School student Daniel Flores on Tuesday also brought up concerns. The workload is immense compared to going in person, said Flores, who is a student ambassador to the board. It's doable, but students have to devote most of their day to it. Last school year, the school relaxed certain requirements as schools shifted to remote learning. That did not happen this year. Andrew Matthews, representative of the Illinois Education Association, said 30 educators so far have been issued reprimands for failing to follow new grading guidelines, that classes are larger than the DEA contract calls for, and that teachers are being held accountable for students who are not engaging in remote learning. Matthews, during the board meeting on Tuesday, compared the district's current climate to a nuclear power plant with alarms and sirens going off and no one paying attention to them. He said communication between the union and board is non-existent. This isn't how it works in other districts. You have to have a chance to listen or you can have Chernobyl, he said. Jalen Pierce, who attends Eisenhower, also spoke of the heavy workload and the difficulty being experienced by some students who are having trouble getting online and learning enough to do their homework from online sessions. It's becoming unhealthy for the mental well-being of students, she said. We need more time with teachers for extra help. Students are struggling, and this is a lot of kids. This is from freshmen to seniors, MacArthur and Eisenhower both, people in AP, honors, and regular classes. Decatur is one of the only districts in the region to have been entirely remote since the academic year started. Officials have said they are closely monitoring health data and may return to class as numbers improve. Another announcement is expected on October 30th. Dace said parents must also do their part. Parent-teacher conferences, most held virtually, will be in the next 2 weeks. This is the opportunity to ask these questions, Dace said. How did my child earn that grade? A standards-based approach allows parents to understand more clearly what is expected of students and how to help them be successful in their learning. Pettit said that teachers will follow up with the district in the hope of resolution. Life is hard right now for everyone, she said. Parents, students, teachers need to know you have their back. COVID state. Illinoisans urged to use caution during holidays. Illinois' top public health official urged residents on Wednesday to prepare for holiday celebrations differently this year, as the state continues to see an uptick in newly diagnosed cases and hospitalizations of people with COVID-19-like symptoms. To avoid having our holidays marred by tragedy on the back end, Dr. Ngozi Eziki said, people who are sick around the holidays need to avoid gatherings entirely. Her comments came as the state released guidance for holiday travel and parties that included limiting the number of guests and seating arrangements aimed at curbing the spread of COVID-19. All 11 regions in Governor J.B. Pritzker's statewide reopening plan saw increases in COVID-19 test positivity rates within the past week, and the statewide positivity rate climbed by more than 1% during that period, Pritzker said Wednesday at his weekly pandemic briefing. Most regions also have seen an increase in hospital admissions, which Pritzker called a concerning direction. The state reported 2,862 newly diagnosed cases of coronavirus and 49 additional deaths on Wednesday, raising the state reported totals to 327,605 known cases and 9,074 deaths throughout the course of the pandemic. The 7-day statewide positivity rate was 4.6% for the period that ended Tuesday, up from 3.5% a week earlier. Ezeki urged people planning holiday celebrations to spend as much time outdoors as possible to limit the number of people, increase air circulation indoors, and limit potential exposure to illness in the 2 weeks leading up to a gathering. The safest way to celebrate with members of your household is to connect with people outside of your household virtually. But I know, we all know, that many people will be gathering and getting together with family and friends, Ezeki said Wednesday. Ezeki also said if people are hosting others or attending a gathering outside their home for the holidays, I think we have to get used to the idea of even in our home wearing masks, as unnatural as that may feel. The state's guidance also asks Illinois residents to consider gift shopping online rather than visiting stores in person, and opting for delivery or curbside pickup grocery options, and to avoid potluck or buffet serving for meals, with seating arrangements that space out people from different households. Dr. Robert Murphy, executive director of the Institute for Global Health at Northwestern University's Feinberg School of Medicine, said in an interview this week that he's extremely concerned about the recent resurgence of COVID-19 in Illinois. While Illinois has done relatively well in slowing the spread of the virus compared with its Midwestern neighbors, it never reduced spread to the low levels seen in New York and New England, Murphy said. He's attributed this to students returning to school, employees returning to workplaces in greater numbers, the politicization of the pandemic, and fatigue with social distancing and other precautions urged by public health officials. With vaccines and treatments in development, Murphy said he believes that a year from now we're going to be in a very different and much better place. But first, there is a difficult winter ahead. Wait till it gets really cold here, Murphy said. This is going to be a nightmare, and the public health people are ringing the bells. But I don't think people get it. We never got rid of wave one, but this winter is going to be, I think, very challenging. The latest daily count of newly diagnosed cases of COVID-19 came from a batch of 52,669 tests conducted during a 24-hour period. As of Tuesday night, 1,974 people with COVID-19 were hospitalized in Illinois, with 390 patients in intensive care units and 153 on ventilators. A week earlier, the state reported that 1,679 people were hospitalized with coronavirus. A month ago, the state reported that 1,431 people in Illinois were in the hospital with COVID-19. One region, the 9-county northwest region of the state that includes Rockford and Galena, remained subject to stricter rules for bars and restaurants and a smaller gathering size cap than the rest of the state. That region's positivity rate had bloomed to more than 10% as of Sunday, the state public health department reported Wednesday. Pritzker warned Wednesday that far southern Illinois could soon fall under the same tightening rules if it surpasses the state's set threshold of 8% positivity rate for 3 consecutive days. That region reached 8% earlier this week, but dipped back below that mark in the numbers the state reported Wednesday. Ruling to end census scuttles $1 million Illinois outreach drive by Raymond Troncoso, Capital News, Illinois, Springfield. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled the Trump administration could shorten the U.S. census count on Tuesday, just hours after the Illinois government committed an additional $1 million to outreach. The Trump administration originally tried to shorten the end date of the census to September 30th, but federal courts mandated the administration keep the count going until October 31st, the extended deadline originally set by the federal government in response to the coronavirus pandemic. However, following the 7-1 SCOTUS ruling, the U.S. Census Bureau announced it was ending the count at 5 a.m. Friday in Illinois. The Census Bureau will continue to accept self-responses from Illinoisans online at my2020census.gov through that 5 a.m. deadline, and will accept phone responses and paper forms postmarked by October 15th. Governor J.B. Pritzker tweaked about the ruling shortly after its announcement, calling the decision wrong and saying it could lead to an undercount in communities that can least afford it, perpetuating generations of disinvestment that make our nation weaker. Enumeration, or the total rate of households being counted in the census, is currently at 99.9% for the U.S. and Illinois, according to the Census Bureau. However, census outreach advocates say that the self-response is a more reliable measure for an accurate count. Reliving Old Times, former Oak Grove students and teacher get together monthly, by Valerie Wells, Decatur. Robert Patterson's students at Oak Grove School loved him so much that when one of them found him on Facebook almost 2 years ago, she knew she wanted to get back in touch. Janet Helm Poe suggested former students could meet Patterson for lunch and everyone could catch up on each other's lives. Patterson was game, and so many former students were interested that it's become a monthly event. "He was our next-door neighbor when I was a child," Poe said. "We got hold of him and posted it on Facebook, and every time we have somebody different. We've had them from Texas and Florida and just all over. We just decided to keep it going once a month, and he's just enjoyed it." Patterson is 88 and jokes that he's a senior citizen, but so are his former students now, who are in their 70s. "I thought it was great," he said. "Some I hadn't seen since they were in sixth grade. I got to learn about their families and what they had done, and the subject just changes all the time. They remember things that happened better than I do." He comes from a large family and had a lot of nieces and nephews, which made him realize he wanted to be a teacher. He spent 36 years as a teacher and principal in Decatur schools and was Baum School's first principal when it opened in 1975. Oak Grove, like most Decatur schools, was a neighborhood school in the 1950s and 60s when the students attended it, and most played in Oak Grove Park next door to the school, too, said Linda Locke, one of the regulars. "Everybody liked him," she said. "He was just one of our favorite teachers, and he came to our 50th class reunion, and also Miss Montgomery, another one of our teachers, and that's where the idea really started. It was so great to see him." "Life was simpler then," Locke said, "when she walked a block to get to school, and summers were spent playing boondoggle, softball, dodgeball, and tetherball in the park with other neighborhood children. Having lunch with her teacher makes those days seem closer." The October lunch had to be canceled because several regular attendees had conflicts of one kind or another, but they plan to meet again in November at the 4-star diner in Mount Zion. "They're always good to set up a place for us where we can all be together," Patterson said. "It's an enjoyable experience for me." Man denies murder and attempted murder charges. Amos accused of killing one man, almost killing another. By Tony Reed, Decatur. Delan L. Amos told a judge Wednesday he was pleading not guilty to murder and attempted murder charges that accuse him of killing one Decatur man and almost killing another, in a hail of bullets fired in back-to-back shootings on consecutive nights. Amos, 29, is charged with 3 alternate first-degree murder counts in the August 26th homicide of Demetrius D. Macklin, 31. Police found Macklin slumped in his car at the intersection of West Grand Avenue and North Edward Street. He had suffered multiple gunshot wounds and was later pronounced dead. And then the next night, August 27th, prosecutors said Decatur police, responding to a shots-fired call at West Packard and North College Streets, found a 36-year-old man bleeding but alive. Police report said he had been shot 4 times in the back, once in his right buttock, and had another bullet wound in his left arm. Surgeons managed to save him, and the victim identified Amos from his hospital bed as one of 2 men who had shot him down as he ran for his life. Amos appeared before Macon County Circuit Court Judge Phoebe Bowers for preliminary hearings, and the judge found probable cause to try him in both cases. Amos is being held in the Macon County Jail with bail set at $11 million, meaning he would have to post $1.1 million to be released. Earlier, prosecuting in the murder case, Assistant Macon County State's Attorney Timothy Tighe heard evidence from Detective Brad Hall. He said a witness had seen Amos arguing with the victim in his parked car in the moments leading up to the shooting. Hall said the witness then heard a series of gunshots before seeing a man she recognized as Amos get out of the car and be driven away in another vehicle that had arrived to pick him up. Hall said even Amos's mother, who had heard about the shooting and rushed to the scene, confirmed he had been with Macklin and was worried about her son's welfare. Defense attorney Dave Ellison asked the detective if he managed to find out who told Amos's mother that her son had been with Macklin. "No," replied Hall. "She was pretty frantic on scene, and I was not able to get a detailed interview with her." Amos had insisted to police he was never there, and claimed he had been at the home of a girlfriend when the shooting went down. In the attempted murder case, Amos is accused of ambushing the victim, assisted by another shooter, LaVron K. Hines, 37, who has previously pleaded not guilty to attempted murder charges. Giving evidence again, Hall said the victim described Hines shooting him first at almost point-blank range with a pistol. The victim then described Amos, armed with an AK-47-style rifle, opening fire and hitting him multiple times as he fled. Hall said the wounded man managed to hide himself in some bushes until police arrived. Ellison asked several questions about the weapon, recovered from a car Amos had been driving, and wanted to know if it had been linked to shell casings found at the scene. The detective said lab results were pending. Ellison then asked if anyone other than the victim had identified Amos and Hines, nicknamed 6-4, as the shooters. "No other witnesses that specifically identified them as shooting," Hall said. "I have spoken to other people who put Mr. Amos and 6-4 at the residence, outside of which the shooting took place, shortly before the shooting." In addition to the attempted murder charge, Amos also pleaded not guilty to charges of aggravated battery, being a felon in possession of a weapon, and aggravated unlawful use of a weapon. Pretrial hearings for the attempted murder and murder cases were scheduled for November 4th. No motive for either the murder or attempted murder was mentioned in court. In brief, Decatur Library to open again on Saturdays. Decatur. The Decatur Public Library, located at 130 North Franklin Street, will reopen on Saturdays beginning October 24th. Hours will be from 9 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. Saturday appointments will be needed to visit the local history room. Information on the vote-by-mail ballot collection and a part-time position with the Friends of the Library, as well as other updates, are available on the library's website by calling 217-421-9766 or email localhistory@decaturlibrary.org. Dove Inc. sets candle lighting ceremony, Sullivan. Dove Inc. is scheduled to hold the 20th annual candle lighting ceremony, Be a Light, at 6 p.m. Tuesday, October 22nd, at Wyman Park in Sullivan. The service will honor domestic violence victims and celebrate survivors and those working to stop abuse. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. The ceremony will feature Speaker Becky Fries, Moultrie County Domestic Violence Coordinator, and the lighting of the candles. Dove Moultrie County Program's 20th anniversary and Dove Inc.'s 50th anniversary will be highlighted during the ceremony. Call 217-728-9303 for more information. State's attorney files no charges in battery case, Decatur. A Decatur man will not be prosecuted after being accused of domestic battery in a fight with his 16-year-old son. The accusation had been made in a sworn affidavit from Decatur police following the September 9th incident. But Macon County State's Attorney Jay Scott said Wednesday his office had reviewed the file and chose not to file any charges against the 38-year-old man due to insufficient evidence. Herald and Review. County Health Department closes Gabby's Restaurant by Jeanette Beckett, Decatur. Citing numerous health violations in a report, Gabby's Family Restaurant in Decatur was closed Tuesday by the Macon County Health Department. The report indicates the restaurant at 1385 East Pershing Road will remain closed until the violations are addressed. The Herald and Review spoke with someone at the restaurant Wednesday morning who identified themselves as being part of the management team. They chose not to comment on the circumstances surrounding the closing. According to the health department's inspection report, the inspector observed various violations during a routine visit, including roaches being found in various areas of the kitchen and storage. The location is closed until pest infestation is eliminated, the report stated. Several repeated offenses were reported, including a plumbing leak, damaged floors, excessive debris, and grease buildup on surfaces. The report also noted the mishandling for various food items. COVID-19 restrictions were also observed by the inspector. At the time of his arrival, none of the four employees were seen wearing face masks. A corrective action plan must be completed before the restaurant will be allowed to reopen, the report stated. After further research, the inspector noted the restaurant had been closed in December 2019 due to similar imminent health hazards, including an infestation of roaches. Murder hearing delayed while new attorney eyes case by Kelsey Watznauer, Bloomington. The sentencing hearing for Taiwan Bruce, a Decatur man convicted of murder in the 2018 death of a Bloomington man, was delayed again Wednesday to give his new attorney time to review the case before moving forward. Attorney Zach Pollack of Joliet requested the transcript of Bruce's August trial and said he would need time to review the case materials before filing any post-trial motions. Bruce, 22, was found guilty of first-degree murder in the death of 20-year-old Egerton Dover, who was killed in December 2018 in Bloomington. His murder charges involve home invasion and robbery, and he was also found guilty of separate charges of home invasion and robbery in this case. Last week, Judge Scott Drazewski held what is known in Illinois as a Krenkel hearing, a type of hearing in which a defendant complains about an attorney's performance. Bruce made several claims in an attempt to show he had ineffective assistance counsel, but Drazewski said each claim lacked merit to appoint a new attorney. Bruce's public defenders, Mark Messman and Mackenzie Frizzell, were allowed to withdraw from his case after Pollack entered his appearance. Messman and Frizzell previously had filed motions for a new trial and for a judgment notwithstanding the verdict of the jury, which were expected to be argued Wednesday. Pollack may file new post-trial motions. Bruce's next court date will be December 21st, when the court will hear arguments on the defense's motions. Depending on the outcome of the motions, sentencing could take place that afternoon. Bruce is one of three Decatur men police identified as suspects in Dover's death. Anthony Gramsis, Bruce's co-defendant in this case, was sentenced in September to 45 years in prison for his involvement in Dover's death. Police have said Curtis Hairston, 18, was also believed to be involved. He died during a 2019 shooting at a Decatur restaurant. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Herald and Review for Thursday, October 15th, 2020. Please stay tuned.